This is Ozarks at Large. USDA Forest Service officials recently gathered with tribal foresters and scientists for an annual three-day conference in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich met with several indigenous participants to bring us this story.
The USDA Forest Service is charged with managing national forest system resources, but 20 years ago, the Forest Service began to establish relations with Native American tribes, developing a strategic planning framework for USDA Forest Service initiatives that acknowledge First Nation sovereignty and protect Native American rights and interests. Tribes and foresters have collaborated on complex policy issues regarding timber and water resources, conservation, as well as energy and mineral development, but this unique tribal relations program also aims to incorporate indigenous worldviews and practices. For more than a dozen years, stakeholders have also gathered for the annual To Bridge a Gap conference. Last year, it was hosted by the Delaware Nation in Norman, Oklahoma. This year, officials with the Ouachita Ozark St. Francis National Forest staged a conference in Fayetteville at the town center with dozens of research scientists and forest agents.
My name is Sarah Hoagland, and I'm a tribal member. I'm from the Pueblo of Laguna. There's really a benefit to bridging this gap. There's a huge benefit of having tribal leaders, tribal elders, natural resource managers from tribes come together with the U.S. Forest Service and other federal agencies and just having informal discussions and talking about the issues.
Sarah Hoagland is a USDA Forest Service research biologist based in Flagstaff. She said along with national forests, the U.S. also has Indian forests.
18 million acres of Indian forests. And yes, that's forests on reservations. And that's a significant amount of land. That's almost 3% of the, you know, contiguous 48 states. And then on top of that, the Forest Service has, you know, I think 6 to 7% of the land base. So combined, that's almost 10% of the land. So if we're talking also big picture, if we can, you know, work with those two and broaden our goals, you know, that's really going to help with, you know, sustaining our environment into the future.
Hoagland says fire suppression and timber practices on forest lands have created dangerous fire conditions in some places where native foresters historically have used best management practices.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've seen, is that tribes have been using fire, you know, until before current times. They've been using it forever, essentially. And we're seeing now that as they continue those practices, they've basically become models of how the landscape should look. And so their active prescribed burns are really beneficial for the environment, and we're learning from that.
Mike Dockery, a member of the Potawatomi Nation, works for the Northern Research Station of the U.S. Forest Service. He spoke about traditional sustainable forestry practices of the Menominee Nation in northeastern Wisconsin.
And that story is essentially that sustainable forestry started in the United States, in Wisconsin, on the Menominee Indian Reservation. I laid out a vision that one of their chiefs had. There's oral history that talks about how to manage the forest sustainably. And this is a chief from the treaty era, Chief Oshkosh. So in the mid sort of 1850s, when they were signing their last treaties with the government, Chief Oshkosh was essentially saying, we can start at one end of the reservation and harvest the trees that are mature, the ones that are sick, the ones that are dying, and we can go to the end of the reservation, turn around essentially, and come back, and we can do that forever. The Menominee then have been very politically astute, and they formed partnerships. So they worked with their federal partners to get several laws passed. The first one is the first law that codifies a limit on timber harvesting in the United States. In 1890, they had a law that limited timber harvest in the United States on the reservation. So it said they could only cut a certain amount of timber, and the Menominee pushed for that. Previously, they could only cut dead and downed timber. The Menominee thought, oh, this is great because we can do this forever. We can implement Chief Oshkosh's vision with this law. Trees for timber to sell, you know, going through the sawmill. They've cut it not just once or twice, but in many places five or six different times. They continually go in and harvest. It's one of the heaviest managed forests in the United States. And again, they've got more today than when they started, and it's of higher quality.
First Nations don't live off the landscape, Dockery says. They're members of it.
There's really not a separation between people and the trees. So the term sort of virgin forest doesn't really make a lot of sense because we're part of the forest, we're part of the trees. I truly believe, and you can look at the record with fire and other things, that human beings made these forests the way they are. You can even see this in the tropics. The Amazon rainforest is not a virgin forest. It's a garden.
This conference was staged on the Ozarks Plateau, and participants learned that the Ozark-St. Francis National Forest, which covers more than 1 million acres, is one of the most diverse forests in the nation. And the Ozarks Plateau was Osage territory.
My name is Everett Waller. I'm from the Hominy Indian Village on the Osage Reservation in Hominy, Oklahoma. Wajaji, which is the Osage people, are broken down into three districts in Oklahoma, Wakakoli, Zonzoli, and Pozoli. And those are actual names from Missouri over forest, upland forest people, thorny thicket people, mound areas that don't have trees.
The Osage, among most tribes, were either coerced by treaty or forcibly dislocated from historic homelands, in this case, Missouri and Arkansas, under the Indian Removal Act of 1830. And their ancient territory was vast, Everett Waller says.
Approximately 900 million acres from the Ohio Valley down to Colorado to the outskirts of Texas. That was our hunting trails and our war trails.
At the conference, Everett Waller talked about preserving and restoring sacred Osage burial sites on forest lands under NAGPRA, Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, and NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. He cited one expedition where he reburied the remains of an Osage girl.
This is our family here. I cannot teach my children anything about just the love of who they are, what their people are. But up here, you can actually show them. And I think that is necessary. And also, rangers change hands, people change hands. But they allowed me to go to the White River last year and put a girl back where it had come out of the riverbank. And all this time, I've been doing the repatriation for the nation for the last 15 years. I do the ceremonies at home. I do the funeral ceremonies and the healing ceremonies. I'm only a vessel. It's just what I've been taught by my people to help each other. I want them to know that there's something still here because those people would need to come back home. The repatriation is so close to my heart because I don't feel like I'm holding a box of someone I don't know. I feel just the opposite, that this is my great-great-grandfather. This is my great-great-grandmother. And that maybe in the next world, I'll meet them, and maybe they can tell me then I'm okay.
Osage cultural liaison Everett Waller says ultimately, there's no such thing as a forest preserve because all of the United States is sacred tribal territory. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And if you'd like to hear an extended version of Everett Waller's interview of his people's history, you can go to our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.